When we consider the question, what are you seeking? Many of us, I think, hear the question, what am I seeking for me? Perhaps, what am I seeking for my family? I got the phone call from Karen this week, and we sent out the email, and she was seeking prayers for Imani, seeking prayers for that the Pepperdine community as the fires closed in on the campus there in California, in Malibu. And so if we ask that question at any given time, we may have different answers. What are you seeking? But usually, that's what we hear. What am I seeking for me? And over the last couple of weeks, we've looked at examples in Scripture of people who, when asked this question, think outside of themselves. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the story of the Apostle Peter and his interaction with Tabitha, also known as Dorcas, in Acts chapter 9. And we saw how, in different ways, each of them lived their lives for the benefit of others. Whether it was Peter going around preaching, or if it was Tabitha located in one place but investing her resources, her time and her talents in the poor of that city and making of that town, of making clothes for the widows and just pouring herself out into the lives of those around her. And then when she died, as we go to those people who are obviously very needy themselves, and we say, what are you seeking? And they say, we would love for Tabitha to be restored to life. And God was able to do that. And last week we focused on Ephesians 1, verses 15 through 23, which is Paul's prayer for the church of Ephesus. And as we put that prayer under the microscope and we say, Paul, what are you seeking? What's important to you? And he writes and he says, well, here's what I want for the church in Ephesus. Here's what I want for the Christians. I first of all, I give thanks for them. I'm continually giving thanks for those people that have given their lives to following Jesus. And then, secondly, what I'm seeking is I'm seeking that they will know God. I'm seeking that they will know the power of God, that they will experience that in their lives, that it will be transformative to them. And we considered, what does that feel like to pray that kind of prayer for people around us? That the people in this room, in this church, that those closest to us, to pray that they may know God and experience His power as we look outside of ourselves. This week, we're sticking with the Apostle Paul. And we come back to him at a different point in life as he interacts with a different church community. And we again ask this question, Paul, what are you seeking? What's motivating your life? What's moving you? What drives you to do what you do? Paul wrote this letter of Romans, strangely enough, to the church in Rome. I know there wasn't a lot of creativity given to the names of the books of the Bible, at least in the New Testament. But the church in Rome was a mix. It was a mix of Jews and Gentile Christians. Now, surprisingly, we don't really know very much about the beginnings of the church in Rome. Of course, there's legend that the Apostle Peter went and he was the person that started it. Other ancient authors give both Peter and Paul the credit for going and starting the church in Rome. But Paul, as we go through the letter of Romans, it's evident that he's never been there. and yet there's a church there. And so we know Paul wasn't the one who started it. In all likelihood, it was Jewish Christians that were maybe at Pentecost, or maybe they'd been part of churches in Antioch or in North Africa, and they had made their way to Rome. Rome was the center of the known world at that point in time, and so people had a way of finding their way to Rome. Okay. Just as in our culture, in our society, people may have a way of finding their way to New York City or to Los Angeles. These big cities tend to draw people to them. And so what starts out as maybe a, if we just think in terms of food, you know, a regional food from somewhere in the United States, but then as people are drawn to those large coastal cities, somebody decides to open a shop, open a store, open a restaurant that is their regional food. And so you'll find a little bit of everything making its way to those big cities. And that's what happens as these Jewish Christians from Jerusalem or Antioch or North Africa or maybe from Greece, as they just travel, as they go about their business, some of them find their way to Rome. And when they reach Rome, some of them, they begin talking about their faith. And some Gentiles become Christians. But it started out in the Christianity, started out in the Jewish community. In fact, we have ancient letters that the Roman governors would write to each other, and they're like trying to understand this new Jewish movement. Like, what's going on amongst the Jews talking about Christianity? And so, in Rome, they've got this diverse church of Jew and Gentile all meeting there, but it was causing a lot of conflict. In 49 AD, so not that long after the death of Jesus, probably died around 30 AD, so about 20 years later, the Emperor Claudius expelled the Jews from Rome. This is an ancient historian wrote, expelled the Jews from Rome because they were constantly rioting at the instigation of Crestus. You go, well, who's Crestus? Probably, now in Latin or Greek, you know, Christus is the name of Christ. So Christus, Crestus, it's probably just a corruption of the term there, as this Roman historian didn't really know who he was. And so it's generally agreed that the Crestus refers to Christ. And the violent debates within the Jewish community in Rome were over the claims of Jesus to be the Christ, to be the Messiah. That as Christianity came into the Jewish community, it caused conflict. And we see that in the ministry of Paul as he traveled around the Mediterranean, as he went from city to city, that he would start out in the synagogue, and when he explained the gospel, when he explained who Jesus was and what he did and what he stood for, the Jews got upset with Paul. Sometimes he was just kicked out of the synagogue and he went about his business. Other times, his life was in danger because of the claims he made about Jesus. So it's not surprising that whether Paul was there or not, when Christianity came to Rome as part of that Jewish community in Rome, that it caused problems. And so Claudius says, well, enough of this. I'm just going to boot all of the Jews out of Rome. Problem solved. And so when Paul first runs into Priscilla and Aquila in Corinth, they had just come from Italy because of the order of Claudius. But Christianity stayed in Rome. Just because the Jews left didn't mean that Christianity left. Now you have a church of Gentiles who are continuing to practice and live out their faith. They maintained the church, they grew the church, they continued to encourage one another. A few years later, the Jews begin filtering back. This edict wasn't forever and all time, and so the Jews begin filtering back to Rome. And when they come back to Rome, things are different. Anyone ever left somewhere and come back? And you think things should be a particular way, and they're not. Like that store that you thought, you know, was just had the best whatever, isn't there anymore. Or maybe you get there and you go back to see your family, and instead of them just falling all over you, they're just busy going about their lives. You're like, hey, I'm here. I got no idea where that illustration came from. But things happen. Things move on. Things change. And it's different. The school you went to. You go back to the school, there's a new building. There's a new way of doing things. There's new, you know, obviously new principal, new teachers, maybe new classrooms. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less. Maybe the school closed down. Maybe it moved to a new facility. Maybe it merged. You know, like, things just change. And so we have these Jewish Christians coming back to the church that they were involved in starting, that is a Jewish religion, right? It starts with Jesus, who's a Jew. It's spread through the Jewish community. And now those poor Gentiles have had to live for 5 years, 10 years without us. And now we're back. They should be so glad to see us. Right? We can fill up their knowledge again of all the Old Testament traditions and teachings, and we can explain the significance of different passages. We can, you know, enrich their understanding of Jesus' teaching and what they know of all of that. And it's just going to be good to be back, and I know folks will be glad to see us. But this time when they come back, it's not quite like that. They're a minority within the church. And so apparently some of these Gentile Christians, because they're now the majority, they've actually developed an attitude of being of superiority over the Jews. Maybe even some of that early idea of the Jews have rejected Jesus. That's why all the Jews were kicked out of Rome, right? Because significant portions of the Jewish community rejected Jesus and rejected those who decided to follow him. And so these Gentile Christians, they're saying, well, look at us. We're following Jesus. Like, we're on board with this. And those Jews just aren't quite getting it. So in Romans 11 and verse 1, Paul writes to the Roman church. Remember, it's Jews and Gentiles. And he poses this question. It's sort of in a rhetorical, in an argumentative way. He says, did God reject his people? Okay, so the reason he's saying that is because some of them are saying that. He's saying, you know, he's just saying, let's address these issues that are confronting the church there in Rome. Number one, did God reject his people, the Jews? His answer is no, by no means. He says, I'm an Israelite myself, a descendant of Abraham from the tribe of Benjamin. God did not reject his people whom he foreknew. And he goes on and expands on that. The Jews, Paul says to the Roman church, are still God's people. His history with Israel can't just be swept under the rug and said, that's gone. We're starting over with the Gentiles. However, the gospel isn't limited to the Jews. And so in Romans 12, verse 12 of that same chapter, chapter 11, Paul here is specifically speaking to the Gentiles in the church. We know that because he says, I am talking to you Gentiles. Inasmuch as I am the apostle to the Gentiles, I take pride in my ministry. So this is the change that's happened. It's not that God has rejected the Jews, but it's that he has welcomed the Gentiles. And so, as I already mentioned, that's why Paul's first step when he came to a city was to go to the synagogue, but he never stayed in the synagogue. Like sometimes we go, oh, well, Paul went to the synagogue, and then when he'd worn out his welcome there, he went to the Gentiles after that. As though that was like an afterthought. Or that if the Jews in that place had accepted Paul, that he would never have gone to the Gentiles. He'd never have gone to the Greeks. He'd never have reached out to them because he was a Jew going to the Jews, talking about the Jew Jesus. But that's not it. Paul's intent was always to begin with the Jews because that's what God did. But then it was always to expand to the Gentiles. That wasn't an afterthought. If his ministry, if his teaching had have been accepted at a synagogue, he still would have gone to the Gentiles, to the Greeks, to the Romans, to the Persians, to the barbarians, whoever it was that lived in that city, to make sure that they heard the gospel. And so the book of Acts describes this pattern time after time of Paul going first to the Jews but then to the Gentiles. And he traveled around the Mediterranean Sea making sure that the good news of Jesus was spread. So Paul, apostle to the Gentiles, it's not just a throwaway line. It's certainly not the center of this argument. If I was going through this Romans chapter 11, verse by verse, this would be a very small part of the conversation. Right? It's not Paul's main point. But nonetheless, it's not just a throwaway line. This was how Paul viewed himself. I am Paul, apostle to the Gentiles. It lets us know that Paul had a clear picture of God's calling upon his life. It wasn't his job. He knew absolutely that it wasn't his job to camp out at the temple gates and to share the good news of Jesus with any Jew that came in to worship at the temple. That would be a wonderful ministry. That would be a great opportunity because you already have religious people coming. They already believe in Yahweh, and all you have to do is introduce them to Jesus. And so that would be a tremendous ministry, but Paul said, that's not for me. My ministry is to the Gentiles. That's who I am. That's how God has called me. Now, I'm using that word Gentiles, and maybe you've heard it before, maybe you haven't. It essentially just means anyone that's not a Jew. The way that the Jews saw the world, there were only two groups of people. There were Jews and there were Gentiles, right? We're a lot more complicated in the way we view the world today. We have a lot of different groups of people in our society. So when we think of Gentiles, that means us. Unless anyone in here is a Jew and I'm unaware of it. And so we can have this picture of Gentiles as being pretty good people. Middle-class Americans. We positive contributors to society. Of course God welcomes Gentiles into the church. Why wouldn't he? And so I think we have to step back into those first century shoes for a moment and think about exactly what Gentile meant. Because it didn't just mean, sure, like demographically it meant people that aren't Jews, but there was a lot more going along with that. What it meant was people that don't worship Yahweh. It meant people that are threats to our religion. It meant people that worshiped false gods. And we know what happened to Israel when they got caught up in the worship of false gods. They were conquered by the Babylonians and taken into exile. It meant not just that they worshipped a different religion, but there was so much morally that went along with that different religion that the Jews regarded it as abhorrent. It made them unclean. They didn't just go to the temple of Zeus or the temple of Diana. They didn't just participate. I mean, the Olympic Games were done in the nude. And to the Jews, that's abhorrent. Right? Their moral standards didn't accept that. And it was going on all around them. There was, whether it be the sexuality, the promiscuousness of the Roman culture, of the Roman and Greek gods, of those stories, of the violence that was caught up in those stories, maybe it was that these Gentiles, nations, were currently ruling God's people, that they were disrupting the natural order of the way that things should be. I mean, Gentiles were the enemy. But not just the enemy, they were morally suspect. Polytheist, sexually immoral, hedonistic, unclean. And Paul said, I'm going to go to those people. I'm going to tell them about Jesus. And we know how big a deal this was for the early church. The first few chapters of the book of Acts describe the struggle that the church had to say, can these terrible people actually become followers of Jesus? Is that conversion possible? Does God really want them? And it wasn't just a racism thing. It was a purity thing. That these outsiders are so far from the holiness of God. And so we find this division of labor in the first church where Paul says, they're my people. Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles, while James was the apostle in Jerusalem, and Peter was the apostle maybe to Judea or to other Jewish communities or... They each, if going back, even in history, they spread out to different places. But right there at the beginning, Paul was the one, Peter broke the ice, but Paul was the one that skated on the ice. He took off and said, I'm going to take the gospel to these people that the Jews and even the Jewish Christians have a really hard time spending time with. In fact, Paul didn't just view them as basket cases, as projects of people that needed to be of aid, he became an advocate for them. When the Apostle Peter got into a habit, he'd been in a habit of eating with Gentiles, and when he got in a habit of not eating with them because he said, oh, there's Jews here, I'm going to go eat with them, instead of the Gentiles, Paul said, no, I am advocating for the Gentiles, Peter. And you are neglecting them, and that is unapostolic of you. That is ungodly of you, because these people that you spent your growing up years thinking of as ungodly and as unclean, as unreachable and as unlovable, God loves them, and you need to make that adjustment, Peter. And when you make that adjustment, Peter, then they will make the adjustment to come to God. And so Paul's entire message in Romans chapter 11 is that the Gentiles should respect the Jews, even when the Gentiles outnumber the Jews. Just because you're the majority doesn't mean that you get to disrespect the Jewish minority. Even when the Jews have chased Paul from city to city, even when the Jews have beaten Paul, even when the Jews have thrown Paul into prisons, Paul still says to the Gentiles, you need to love these people, not just because they're my people, but because they're God's people. And so he reminds the Gentiles that, yes, the church is growing amongst the Gentiles. Yes, the church is spreading throughout the Roman Empire. Yes, there are many Jewish communities who have rejected Jesus. But Gentile communities, you need to remember that you are the new branch that is being grafted into the rootstock that is Judaism, that is God's people of Israel. And the Gentile church will continue to receive its nourishment from the sap of Judaism. And so Paul doesn't allow his distinct responsibility to a particular ethnic group, the Gentiles, to create division in the church. It doesn't matter who has the majority. Rather, the church is founded upon love and mutual respect. Because in verses 30 to 32 of Romans 11, we're told that we all depend, Jew or Gentile, we all depend upon the mercy of God. Let me just read that for you. Just as you who were at one time disobedient to God, the Gentiles, have now received mercy as a result of the disobedience of the Jews, so they too have now become disobedient in order that they too may now receive mercy as a result of God's mercy to you. For God has bound everyone over to disobedience so that he may have mercy on them all. There's a lot of disobedience and mercy in there. The point is that the Jews needed to recognize their disobedience. They always knew that the Gentiles were disobedient. They always knew that if there was any way that those terrible people could come into relationship with God, it was going to take incredible mercy from God. But we're God's people. We're doing pretty good. Like you know, there's Galilee, Jerusalem, heaven. And, you know, the Gentiles are like way down the other end there. And so Paul says when the Jews see how the Gentiles embrace Jesus, they're going to get envious. They're going to say, hang on, if those Gentiles are coming into this relationship with God, we need to lift our game. And they will recognize their own disobedience rather than their supposed holiness. And it's only when they recognize their disobedience that they recognize their need for mercy. And when they recognize their need for mercy, having always known that the Gentiles needed mercy, then we understand that everyone needs God's mercy. And if we all need God's mercy, we can't have this competition in the church about whether Jews or Gentiles get our way and make things the way that we like them. No one is better than the other. We've all been disobedient and we all depend upon God for our salvation. Now, I don't know about you, but I feel at times a little jealous of Paul. I would like my life to be simpler. Maybe I would like my life to be more purposeful. I'd like my purpose to have greater clarity. Perhaps it would go something like this. A prophet would come to my office, knock on the door and say, Peter, God wants you to work as his representative to this particular group of people. He could give me a zip code. He might give me an ethnicity. He may give me a lifestyle. He may give me people that are into a particular hobby. I don't know what it would be, but if God could arrange that, I think I'd be invigorated with a sense of purpose as to what it meant for me to live out my life as a servant of God. Maybe you're the same. Maybe you're floating in your faith. You're thankful for what God's done for you, but you don't have anyone to share it with in particular. Maybe you're waiting for the voice from heaven to say, hey, you really should be teaching that Sunday school class for the teenagers. You'd be good at that. You have a lot to offer. They'd be excited to be hanging out with you. Go do it. Maybe you're waiting for the voice to say, hey, this is God. I'm sending you. I know God has an Australian accent too. Like Paul and last week, God this week. that, hey, this is God. I'm sending you as my ambassador to drug addicts in this city. Not the suburbs, just the city. Or not the city, just this suburb. Or whatever it might be. Or maybe it goes like this. Hey, this is God. Why aren't you spending more time with your family? Don't you know that they need my good news? And if you got that message that said, hey, you need to be... The word apostle means someone who is sent. And so if God said, I'm sending you to go somewhere, he's saying, I'm making you my apostle to your family. I'm making you my apostle to this group of people. I'm making you my apostle to... But instead of this type of clarity, we often end up trying to relate to everyone. And maybe... in that process, we end up relating to no one. Or maybe we just don't think about it. It's like, Peter, you got all that out of that? I know. It's my job to think about it. So I want to encourage you to think about it. I want to encourage you, will you pray this week for God to give you a sense of who he wants you to serve? I think that there's a place for us to be serving everyone, right? I mean, we run into random people and God, and some of those encounters are God moments. The divine appointments, I've heard them called. Yeah? And just to use a cliche, it's the person on the side of the road who's got a flat tire that you decide it's a God appointment, I'm going to get out, I'm going to help change the tire. Before you know it, you're swapping phone numbers and they're in church the next week, right? That's how the parable goes, something like that. And God can use that type of divine appointment when we're committed to being his people wherever we are. But I wonder if we aren't also commissioned to be apostles in particular locations with particular people. And so pray and ask for God to reveal to you, your Gentiles. These may be people that you wouldn't ordinarily spend much time with, but because of Jesus, you're committed to them hearing and experiencing the good news of Jesus. It might be people in your office, in your school, in your workplace, people in your family. Perhaps it's a particular group of people in the community. And so I know that what I'm saying here isn't something easy. Like, what? I have to get to know people that I don't already know. I have to go to people that I'm not naturally attracted to. Like, let's not think that it was easy for Paul to suddenly begin reaching out to the Gentiles. There's this whole sort of genre in the epistles about whether we should, that the early church could eat food that had been offered to idols. Like, what's the Jewish relationship with a culture that was so pagan, with gods everywhere, that even the food that was sold in the market had previously been offered to a pagan god? Like, how do we interact? Like the abhorrence of paganism and that worship of those gods was so great that they're like, I'm not even sure if I can have that meal. And so don't think that it's harder for you to walk across the break room and talk to somebody that you've seen but haven't talked to for a long time, that's more difficult than it was for Paul to become the apostle to the Gentiles. And so this portion of Romans 11 reminds the Gentile Christians in Rome that they're to be bridge builders. That it's their job as the majority in that church to reach out to those Jewish Christians coming back to Rome. It's their job to welcome them, to embrace them, to make them feel comfortable and valued. And in our fragmented society, there are a lot of people around us that need bridges built to them. And the people that you know, the people that you come in contact with are different from the people that I come in contact with. There are people disenfranchised from society. There are people disenfranchised from the church. And you know some of them. And you can picture them. And maybe it's an individual, but that individual represents a group of people like them. And it's easy just to walk away and say, well, they're not interested, or they've rejected, or they wouldn't. Paul says, to the Gentiles, you need to be bridge builders to the Jews. And if the Jews were the majority, in fact, in other situations where there were, he said to them, you need to welcome in the Gentiles and accommodate them. You need to break down the barriers. I'm not trying to brag on myself here, but I've been asked at times why I attend dinners with the Muslims down at the Turkish Cultural Center. And I've, you know, invited people here to come with me at different times and get to know them. And I don't have anyone there on speed dial in my phone. They're not best friends. We don't go to the park together or go bowling together. But I'm convinced that they need Christians in their lives. Right? Whether or not there's ever a Bible study or ever a baptism, that just the way our society works, that those people need Christians, need people willing to build, extend bridges to them. And here's the thing, is that the truth is I need Muslims in my life. Not because I want to become a Muslim, but I need them because they see the world differently. They help me understand the way the world works. That I can come here and I can be with people who are like me, but all I do is create a sounding chamber. That I need to be with people that are different than myself. And you might say, well, why Muslims? Why not this? It's like, that's your job to go to that place. To go to those people. This particular cultural center is like a 10-minute walk from my house. They're my neighbors. And so I go to them, I get to know them, and I have Muslims in my life, and they have Christians in their life. And so Paul didn't embrace the religious beliefs and the pagan practices of the Gentiles, but he knew that God was calling him to walk towards them, not away from them. I think that's a challenge for us. And so what are you seeking, Paul? And Paul writes to us, he says, inasmuch as I am the apostle to the Gentiles, I take pride in my ministry in the hope that I may somehow arouse my own people to envy and save some of them. Maybe you extend an olive branch to people that never become Christians, but you may encourage someone else, somewhere else, in another area of your life, to commit to following Jesus because of the way they see you. Treat those people that are so different from yourselves. So, church, what are you seeking? Who are you seeking? Jesus in Matthew 5 said to his followers, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And I think oftentimes we think of that as a candle on a lampstand that's just in the middle of the room and everyone sees that light. And there's rooms that need that type of light. But there's also situations where that light that we're not hiding is more focused. It's more like a flashlight. And we carry that flashlight with us. We don't just sit it in the middle of a room. We carry it with us where we go. And as we shine it, it extends a beam to those around us, a beam of light into their lives, as we build bridges and share God's love with the Gentiles in our lives, the Gentiles that we encounter. And so I hope that you're encouraged to think about that, to pray for God to just open your eyes this week to people around you. But maybe you're feeling like you need light in your life today. Like, it's not just something that we give. Our lights go out, our lights get dim. Things are tough sometimes. And so we don't want to come here on Sunday morning and say, hey, everybody go out, be happy and cheerful and joyful and, you know, rejoice in the Lord always and never have a frown on your face and just, you know, be this positive influence in the world. I mean, that's great. I hope that some of us are able to do that. But I also know that some of us are hurting. I don't know what your hurt is this morning, or if you have one. I know that some of us are. And so if we can encourage you, if we can support you, maybe you've never thought about your relationship with God before, never thought that God valued you when other people didn't. Think about that. There were Gentiles who didn't know that God loved them. And Paul's mission was to let them know that that was a reality. So maybe you've not known that, not accepted that, not welcomed God's love before, and would love to share that with you and explain that and discuss that more. You can come. We're going to sing a song. If you have a prayer need, you can come and let us know that during the song. If you just want to say, Peter, I'd like to get together with you and talk about this afterwards, you can come and let me know that during the song, or talk to me or someone else afterwards. And say, what is this light of Jesus? What is this love that was changing the world and in that first century, and how can it change my life? Let's stand and let's sing together.